Hello and welcome to Sleeping Through Class. I am Kevin Beato and I am joined by Brendan Horho and Nick Rishkevitz. This is a podcast dedicated to learning about world history. This is dedicated to any student who is sitting at home trying to get through the end of their school year due to this COVID-19 crisis. So this is geared towards middle and high school students and everyone in between. This is episode 4, and we are getting into the Age of Exploration. The Age of Exploration is brought about by different advances in technology that make it easier to expand the breadth of knowledge of the globe. Brendan, could you please tell us a little bit about some of these advances in technology?
So technology is really helpful, right? When new things are created, people can discover new ways of learning, right? Galileo, for instance, once he has the telescope, is able to see planets that are really far away, right? And you can see the features of those planets, right? So oftentimes, innovation leads to discovery. So in this case, when we're talking about explorers that are trying to explore the globe, there's a couple pieces of innovation that really, really help. One instrument is called an astrolabe, which is basically a way of measuring your location on the planet. It helps you figure out your latitude. Compasses were another innovation. Compasses would direct you which way was north, so you knew which way you were traveling, and you could determine if you were going east, west, south, northeast, whatever, thanks to compasses. And then one key innovation, which really helped European explorers start to explore the rest of the world, was something called a caravel. So it was a ship. There had been ships for a long time, these boats that could go back and forth between relatively small distances, but caravels were lighter and faster than other ships. They were very agile. They could almost turn on a dime compared to these other ships. And one of the major reasons for this was they had a rudder in the back, which would allow the captain of the ship to steer it. And so it wasn't like the old Viking ships where everyone had to row and they had to sort of, coordinate and have somebody calling out things in order to turn. And then in addition to that rudder on the back, they had a triangular sail known as a lateen sail. And so you could turn your sail and suddenly you could catch the wind, you know. Oftentimes you might be going against the wind and it makes travel very, very hard, but you can't change the wind, but you can adjust your sails.
All right. Fascinating stuff there.
I thought you'd appreciate that quote.
I do. Good old Civ reference. In past episodes, we've talked about the Silk Road, this trade network that connected Europe and East Asia, where things like spices were traded between the two sides of the known world. With the rise of the Ottoman Empire in the 13th century, new routes towards East Asia were trying to be discovered. Portugal, for instance, tried to go south around the tip of Africa and then up through towards like India. Spain, however, tried to go towards the west through the Atlantic Ocean. Nick, could you talk a little bit about, sort of Vasco da Gama and or Christopher Columbus and sort of the differences taken there?
Sure. So Vasco da Gama was looking for a route to India and a quick way to get there by sea. As you mentioned, the Ottoman Empire and their rise and eventually their conquering of the major crossroads city of Constantinople provided a bit of an obstacle for Christian Europeans. Remember, this is after the Crusades, these very violent and bloody wars between Christian Europeans and Muslims. And the Ottoman Empire, being a Muslim empire, now controlled the major trade routes between the East, places like Asia, China, for example, and the West, Europe. And that made it more difficult for European traders to go by land to continue doing this trade. But they still wanted those products from the East. So they decided they were going to look for a water route, a different route to get to Asia from Europe. And Portugal was one of the early countries that started to lead this. Vasco da Gama, his route actually went south down along the coast of Africa and around the southern tip of Africa and then up to India. eventually his route would be sort of followed by a guy named Pedro Cabal, and he would sail a bit further west into the Atlantic and eventually discover South America or find land in South America for Portugal to claim, and that would later become Brazil. We've also got Columbus. Columbus had a different idea. Okay, a lot of people think, or there's sort of this common misconception that people at this time during the Age of Exploration thought the Earth was flat and that if you sailed far enough out into the ocean, you would fall off the edge of the Earth. That's actually not correct. People knew that the Earth was round. The thing was, they didn't know exactly how big the Earth was. So Columbus has this big idea. His idea is that if you sail out into the Atlantic Ocean, the Earth is actually a lot smaller than we think it is, and you will end up sailing across the ocean and ending up in Asia. That's his thinking. So he sort of takes a gamble. It's a risk because they're unsure of exactly how big the Earth is and how big the Atlantic Ocean is. But his voyage would eventually be kind of coined as the Voyage of Discovery. He would land in the Americas. He actually thought that he had made it to India his entire life. He did not realize that he had discovered a new place, or I guess maybe discovered a new place for Europeans, we could say, since there were already people living there. But yeah, Columbus kind of has this voyage that connects the New World with the Old World.
All right, thank you. Brendan, I'll turn to you here to sort of continue with Columbus. Could you first, in two parts, briefly talk about the impact that Columbus had on the New World, but then also go over some vocab terms like triangular trade and the Columbian Exchange?
So when Columbus first arrives, he lands in the Caribbean, and he bounces around to a bunch of different places, but he ends up in like Hispaniola, which is now the Dominican Republic in Haiti. And when he shows up, the natives, they aren't really scared of him or anything like that. They don't really understand each other because they obviously don't speak the same languages. And they're having these interactions, but quickly they realize that the Europeans are not their friends, and they're kind of dangerous. With Columbus, a lot of his men are committing, you know, rape or homicide. They're talking openly about enslaving some of the native people and using them for hard labor. So it's really a way that you can see Europeans are taking advantage of the natives. And Columbus, you know, despite being a murderer and despite, you know, encouraging, you know, this violent behavior and thousands of suicides among the natives, Columbus actually brought something with him that was far more dangerous, and it was germs. So the Native American population was now exposed to a bunch of new germs that the Europeans were immune to. So diseases like smallpox started to spread through Native communities all around the Americas, and it was running rampant because the natives had no natural immunity to these diseases. The Europeans had been exposed to them for a long time, and they were able to handle them much easier. When it comes to the Columbian Exchange, it is one of the sort of positives you can look at when it comes to Columbus. It wasn't all bad. He does open this trading network, which allows the Old World, which is Europe or Asia and Africa, to trade with the New World, which is South America and North America. So you start to have trade, particularly in things like fruit. Coffee is found in the New World and brought back to the Old. Bananas, things like that start to become super, super popular and make their way back over to the Old World. And so you start to see diets in Europe get a lot better. You start to see tobacco being grown more in the Americas and sold. So the production of cigarettes is becoming much, much larger. So you have all these, you know, kind of beneficial aspects of the Columbian Exchange. One of the downsides, in addition to disease, is you start to see the forming of the Triangular Trade Network, which is a network which connects Europe, Africa, and the Americas. And so how this works is the Europeans take manufactured goods like guns, and they will travel down to Africa, and they need labor to work in the Americas, right? If you're going to have these massive plantations or massive farms, you're going to need people to work hard. And the natives don't really work well because they keep dying off. So what they decide to do is they go and they get Africans, and they bring them over on ships, which is a trip called the Middle Passage. And they bring them over to the Americas, where they're basically now being forced into labor. So it's a system called slavery. So as these slaves are being brought from Africa, the Africans that are there, the warlords who are selling these slaves or giving these slaves away, they're receiving manufactured goods from the Europeans. And in the Americas, slave traders are now selling slaves, and they're selling them to these plantation owners and to these farmers who are using slaves to grow raw materials like cotton or tobacco or rice or sugarcane. And this was common all throughout the Americas.
One of the things I always found interesting was that Christopher Columbus thought for the longest time up until his death that he actually did sail around the world to Asia. In fact, he did not, as Brendan laid out and Nick laid out. Instead, an Italian explorer named Amerigo Vespucci, who the new continents are named after, Amerigo turning into America, he actually sailed up and down the coast of the New World to help map it out. And these maps were used to actually prove that Columbus was wrong. He did not sail to Asia. These were, in fact, new bodies of land, new continents that would end up being discovered and eventually taken over by European powers in the upcoming centuries. But with this discovery of the New World, people had this quest to try and actually sail around the world, now that we have a better picture of how big it is. Nick, could you please tell us a little bit about the famous Ferdinand Magellan and then also Sir Francis Drake?
Yeah, those are both explorers who were sent out with this mission to go around the globe and sort of prove that that was possible and maybe get a better idea of how big the Earth was. Magellan, he is Portuguese, but he sails for Spain. And in 1519, he leaves Spain with 250 men. And again, his mission is to go around the globe. Now, he is often credited as being the first explorer to circumnavigate the globe, to go around the globe. But he himself did not make it. Some of his men made it, but Magellan himself was actually killed in a battle with natives in the Philippines. 18 of the original 250 men on his voyage did survive, and in September of 1522, while arriving back in Spain, they were the first people to circumnavigate the globe. So Magellan himself did not make it, but some of his crewmen did make it, and therefore Magellan, as sort of the captain of this voyage, is the one that is credited with circumnavigating the globe. The first person to sort of conduct a voyage and make it himself as well is Sir Francis Drake. He's an English explorer. He ends up going down around the southern tip of South America. He would explore the west coast of South America and also North America. He stopped briefly in California during this time, and then eventually headed north looking for a water route east back to England, but obviously that's not going to happen. He is forced to go west, and ultimately he ends up becoming the second explorer to circumnavigate the globe, and sort of the first one to actually complete the voyage and not be killed along that voyage.
Awesome. Now, we would be remiss in our duties as podcasters and educators if we did not also talk about Asian explorers. There's one very significant figure in the Asian exploration process here. Brendan, could you please tell us more about Zheng He?
Yeah, Zheng He, really interesting guy. Columbus gets a lot of credit for being this explorer and being really brave and going out there and doing all this stuff. But in fact, Zheng He had these really large sort of like convoys of ships that they would travel around the world with. And so from 1405 to 1433, he led 7 different voyages and sailed around with, at times, up to 300 different ships. And these ships aren't like the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. They're not these tiny little caravels. They're these huge monster ships. They're like, you know, 5 to 10 times longer. They're just absolutely massive. So he had 27,000 sailors with him at certain times. And so it's just, in no comparison is the voyages of Columbus, you know, comparable. So the point of his journey is to show how strong the Chinese are. The Chinese for a long time have been isolated. People aren't really going into their country. You know, at one point they build the Great Wall of China to keep foreigners out. And so China is really this closed society. And so they start to go out and explore. And one of the things that he does is he goes and he is with these huge, massive treasure ships going to Africa, going to India, and going to the Middle East. And so he's trading for all kinds of things. He's making China really, really wealthy, and people are realizing that China has a lot of desirable natural resources like silk. But he's also bringing things back to China. So on one of his trips to Africa, he actually brings back rhinos, giraffes, and zebra. So you can really see that this exchange isn't just cultural, it's not just information, but it's actual material goods, you know, and its actual species are now being transported across the world. So really, really interesting to see how the Chinese were able to impact this age of exploration as well.
Nick, for the last topic here for today, could you please tell us a little bit about Ibn Battuta?
Ibn Battuta was a Muslim explorer from Morocco in Africa. And he's got kind of an interesting story. Much of his travel was by foot. He did do some sea travel, but that wasn't kind of the main part of it. But he did a lot of exploring through Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and even Europe, and kind of kept track of these journeys that he took. So when he's compared to some of these other explorers that we sometimes know about, famous explorers like Marco Polo, Zheng He, who we just talked about, he far surpassed them in the total amount of distance that he traveled. It's estimated that Ibn Battuta traveled around 117,000 kilometers compared to Zheng He, who was at about 50,000 kilometers, and Marco Polo, who was at about 12,000. So that kind of puts it into perspective. He traveled over twice as much in terms of distance as Zheng He, which is pretty impressive. His travels took him in from places like in modern countries like Morocco, Algeria, Mali, Chad, Egypt. He had traveled to Bulgaria, to Russia, to Greece, through Turkey, through Syria and Iraq and Saudi Arabia. He had been through Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. He had been down into Southeast Asia and places like Myanmar and Vietnam, and also all the way as far east as Beijing, China.
I hope everyone enjoyed today learning about different explorers from around the world, from Ibn Battuta from Africa to Zheng He in China and the various European explorers. Join us next time as we get into the scientific revolution, and I hope that everyone is staying safe during this quarantine. So for Brendan and for Nick, this is Kevin signing off. Take care.